Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. I've just finished talking.
Sorry, you were just talking about solve the world's greatest conundrums or something. What was that? You kind of threw me for a loop when we were talking about various taglines for the show. What was that?
Yeah, we're brainstorming some marketing stuff, and I came up with, maybe speaking reliability, the tagline should be solving the world's reliability conundrums one conversation at a time. That's all it was. It's just trying to think of something. Right. You gave me 30 seconds notice too, so I do need to float that as a
brainstorm thing. I'm not criticizing it. I just thought this was, a real good candidate for the word of the day is conundrum. I can't even say it. It's clever and we do enjoy talking about reliability stuff and illuminate and illustrate some of the problems we run into and ways around them and dealing with it. So one of them, and we were chatting about it just earlier today, was like process control, right? It's a great tool, does all kinds of cool stuff. And in our last episode, we were talking about accelerated testing, and you get some data and you plot it. In both cases, you really need to take a look at it and what in the world is really going on. What makes these points appear where they are? And then start asking questions about that. And generally, you do it in a team and go explain these black dots on white paper to somebody else. And what does this mean to you? And he goes, well, you got a good printer, is one response I got one time. But I think there's more to it, what you were talking about.
Right. And I think this thought was born out of, again, a statistical process control course I was running. And for those who don't know what statistical process control is all about, essentially, think of a manufacturing process or an asset plant process that's responsible for generating electricity or a process which takes inputs into outputs. The example I use in my courses is making sliced bread. Everyone knows what sliced bread is, and it's actually it's not super complicated, but there's some nuances to making really tasty bread that ferments the right amount and all that sort of good stuff. But statistical process control is a really useful tool at making sure your process produces good outputs, bread that tastes yummy, components that are manufactured within that aren't out of specifications, for example.
Well, I always think of it as it's a process to check. It's a tool to see if you're consistent. I mean, you can make consistently bad bread, but let's say you have a great recipe, and if you don't get the salt just right, then it will not turn out well. So making sure that you have the right amount of salt in every single time, or the steps in the process and the kneading time or the elasticity or all these various things, if they aren't consistent, then, if I add the salt at different times during the bread making process, I'll probably get different results. But if I add it at the same time every time, the same amount, then I'll get consistent results. And I think SPC is a tool for us to monitor a process to see if it's consistent.
Exactly. And I think, we tend to create words which aren't really helpful in reliability and quality circles. And you have to do a course and spend three lessons on that particular definition to say, aha, now I get it.
Yep.
But what you're talking about is the terms that are often used in manufacturing are in control and out of control. So if your bread making process is in control, it means that for all the settings you can influence, the amount of flour, the amount of yeast, the temperatures, the times, if your process produces expected results time after time after time, then essentially your process is in control. Mm-hmm. Expected results include some natural variation. No two loaves of bread will be exactly the same, but we know that. And if those loaves of bread still are what you expect based on the levers you pull, that's fantastic. Your process is in control. But whether that bread is good or not is a different question. So you might have you might turn the temperature up on your oven too much, which means the bread comes out dry and crumbly. That's an expected outcome for a temperature that is too high. If you bake bread for too long or for too high a temperature, you're going to get
bread straight to toast.
Nothing wrong with the process, though. It's doing what it's been told to do.
Right.
It's in control. But it's defective. And so there's two different concepts here. And the idea is that ideally you want to have your process not only in control, but the other term quality guys use is capable, which is not only in spec, but well within specifications, that any natural variation to these loaves of bread still mean that your bread will be in whatever specifications you come up with as reflecting what good or bad bread is.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just talk about processes that are in control, doing what you expect them to do, and processes that are capable, as in those expected outcomes are also good outcomes.
Yep.
Now, statistical process control is great in that it can, assuming you start with a system which you've worked hard to make in control, so it's doing what you expect it to do, and it's within specifications, so it's capable. The idea is that if anything changes, say, for example, I don't know, the thermostat in your oven starts to degrade and the temperature that it thinks it's baking the bread at slowly deteriorates, you're trying to detect any changes in what you expect, from what you expect your process to do. And those changes usually or ideally occur long before that bread becomes defective.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that if you can detect these statistical changes early enough, you have time to root cause analysis and to do root cause analysis, I should say, and find what might be going wrong in a stress-free time when there's no plant manager shouting down from above saying, hurry up and fix this problem. You don't have a problem yet. You're just preventing problems by realizing something has changed in your process.
Yep.
And one of the outcomes might be, oh, okay, so our thermostat has started to degrade. So let's replace the thermostat. And that might mean you never have to stop your bread production line at all while you do this very simple swap in, swap out. And you have prevented a disaster in terms of bread being manufactured or produced, which is essentially bad, without you knowing why or having the time to rectify it before it becomes a problem. But where that long-winded summary is going to end up is we can sometimes get too enamored with statistics. So if you are statistical process control has 8 rules, statistical rules, that if you see any changes that satisfy these rules, I call them unexpected behaviors, they become the triggers for concluding that your process is out of control. And I say that because
that's changed.
An example.
Yeah.
It's changed, correct. What I just said was deliberately wrong. The point I make in my courses is that, hey, each one of these so-called unexpected behaviors still have are still possible to occur for in-control processes. So rule number one, for example, if you have a spike, if you, for whatever reason you're baking bread and the massive one loaf of bread spikes, it goes outside of what you expect and then it comes back down to where you think it should be. Well, based on the rules for statistical process control, you'd expect that to occur naturally one every 370 times, for example. So it doesn't mean it's not possible to occur for an in-control process. Yes, it's an indicator that there's a potential that your process is now starting to become out of control, but you can't use statistics alone to conclude that your process is now out of control or all of a sudden changing the way you suggested. You need to use other things besides numbers that spreadsheets and software packages spit out at you to confirm that something is indeed worthy of rectification.
Well, I'm thinking of if I'm making, 1,000 loaves of bread going down the line and they go into conveyor belt ovens and stuff like that, and then one of them is just way out, right?
Right.
Let's pull that one out and, the standard process for SVC is, well, you get a signal like that. Well, what happened? Gather the evidence, what's going on. So let's take a look at that loaf that indicated it's way out. Is it twice the size or half the size,
That's right.
And if that's true, is that within the range of variation that we expect from the blob maker thing, the thing that
extrudes, the divider.
Yeah, puts out the amount of dough into a pan. is that within range? If not, let's dive into that a little more. What happened there? Did, you know, and so on. But if it's within the nominal variation that you would expect to see, but our process typically is so much more and more precise, then, well, okay, that happened. Move on. But if we find that there's, oh, no, there's somebody's shoe is in this widget here, changing the mechanism every 300 cycles, well, we probably need to take that shoe out of there.
Yeah, or if you found that you've accidentally baked a dead rat into your loaf. That's
I was trying to avoid those kinds of things. This is food process stuff. They're better than that, you know.
Really?
Yeah. No, but you're exactly right. It's
www.google.com might be able to shed some light on how how bad things can be.
Yeah, no, I agree. But the idea is that it kicks off an investigation. And the better SVC programs I've ever witnessed are the people that are running the line, that are actually managing and monitoring and controlling the process, are making these measurements and are seeing are indicated as they signal an out of control circumstance. And then they, sometimes it means shut the line down and figure out what happened, or it's gather data and monitor, or it's, but it's done with that concept is that we need to prove to ourselves that the process is okay. And if not, then we need to elevate this to another level. But if first step is gather the evidence, because the process continues if you don't. And then looking at this data 2 days later is like, well, what was happening then? Well, I don't know. It's not much to go on if you don't do it right away.
Now, the mass of bread is actually, you know, how much a loaf of bread weighs is a really good example, because most loaves of bread, say, weigh 900 grams or roughly, you know, roughly 2 pounds. Mm-hmm. But there is a huge natural variation, which is okay. Some breads, you know, so what is okay for breads to be advertised as weighing 900 grams on the supermarket shelf can be anywhere between 890 grams and 910. So that's, for example, different jurisdictions have different guidelines and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But you know, that's, what's that? 900 plus or minus 10. So that's more than 1% variation. Now, you can't have more than 1% variation in the mirror you're going to use in the Hubble telescope, for example. So what is okay or good or bad is completely dependent on the scenario you're operating within. But let's just go back to our loaf of bread. Let's just say that what is good or bad is anywhere between 890 and 910 grams. And let's just say we worked really hard on our bread making process, so that's really in control and very capable. And let's just say that historically, we know that loaves of bread that come off the production line on average weigh 899 grams plus or minus two.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic. But let's just say we see a spike. What does a spike mean? Well, you talked about the loaf of bread being twice as heavy as the other ones. That's cause for concern. Mm-hmm. But let's just say in this case, remember 899 plus or minus two, so anywhere between 897 and 901. Let's just say one loaf of bread is 902.3 grams.
Whoa.
Statistically, from statistical process controls perspective, that is rule number one, a spike.
Yep.
However,
single point out of control.
Right. Well, not out of control. We need to be careful. It's unlikely based on the statistics.
Yeah. That's true.
But it doesn't mean it's necessarily out of control. And that's one of the things I talk to my students about. Just, you need to look at these rules and understand what's going on. And sometimes one of those rules, for example, includes trending, where you see the process sensor essentially change over time. So it might go from low to high. But if you see this trending where over time you notice that if you're manufacturing a tool, for example, or you're manufacturing a component using tools, that trend might be 100% okay, because that trend is caused by normal tool wear on your production line, which you change that tool every 2 weeks.
Yeah, and then you set back to the other end of the range and it drifts across it. Yeah.
Right, and that drift, as long as it's in specifications, means everything is in control. But statistically, it suggests it's out of control. And so what I was trying to talk to my students about was, these are fantastic indicators that something might be wrong. As a rule, you won't have a process that is out of control which never exhibits some of these eight unexpected behaviors. It's just, it's not going to happen. If it stays in control, there's a chance it will exhibit these eight unexpected behaviors. But if it starts becoming out of control, if your process does indeed change over time, at least one of these eight behaviors will trigger or will be observed, I should say. And so it's an indicator. It's not proof. It's an indicator. It needs to then come back to the physics of the problem. So that's the second thing I highlighted. Statistics are fantastic indicators, but it needs to be coupled with your understanding of the physics of the problem. I think you touched on it, Fred.
Yep.
SPC works well when it's being run by the people who are in charge of the process, who know that process inside and out. They know what can potentially cause that drift. They know which tools where and what effects they have on the outcomes, so on and so forth. But the last little thing I suggested, the third thing, was that, hey, you need to know the physics, but this is a team game. Especially if you get a statistic which you don't automatically know the likely root cause of, you need to maximize the combined corporate knowledge of all the people on your team. And so the third part was facilitation. Do proper root cause analysis, because a lot of processes, including bread making, have so many different factors ranging from the quality and the amount of sugars you put into your bread through to the difference in temperature gradients from bread at the bottom of the oven versus the top. There's so many things going on that you will probably never be able to do a forensically conclusive analysis to say, aha, it was the variation of temperature by 0.3 of 1 degree Celsius from 10:15 to 10:28 6 weeks ago. You'll never get to that conclusion. So you might at best need to identify the majority of potential root causes and using your team's corporate knowledge combined to work out which five, for example, are the most likely. And those are the five you address without ever being able to prove any one of those was the true root cause. And magically, your problems tend to go away for some reason. Yeah. It's been my experience.
And it's kind of the a group of smart people can come up with some very plausible, likely scenarios. And then you go prove it. You work through part of that root cause analysis is to go sort out, right, is this one having an effect or not? And sometimes you get into some pretty detailed studies, but sometimes you knock it off and you chalk it up to, now I'm drawing a blank, the Italian guy, Pareto, you know?
Pareto,
yeah. You know, and sometimes it's continue to monitor and get more data, maybe put a sensor in another place or gather, you know, but the idea is in you're saying facilitation, and it's not just, you know, saying out the agenda before the meeting, it's actually listening to each other and being safe to explore different ideas and pull that knowledge out and put it together. And there's plenty of tools, from Pareto analysis to fishbone diagrams to fault trees and all kinds of other tools to help you organize that data. But they are part of that facilitation process. But I think that the key part is that it needs to be, here we've got an indicator or a signal, there could be something going wrong, we've had a couple of bad results, what could cause that? And be open to the brainstorm process, to pulling out what ifs, you know, not letting the senior idiot in the corner, you know, solve it by himself and say, this is a waste of time, I'm going back to work. It's a bit of skill to pull together a divergent group to come up with a plan of action that actually makes a difference.
Correct. And I've been involved in many scenarios where, you know, something happens and the team of really smart people say, oh, okay, it's probably this, or this. And I go, hey, whoa, we're going to do it this way. I'm going to force you guys. I can tell that you're rolling your eyes and you're not liking what I'm saying, but we're going to sit in this room. I'm going to facilitate a discussion where we start with the observed phenomenon and go down one layer at a time. Do you like fault trees, or do you like Ishikawa diagrams, fishbone diagrams? Do you like doing this in a Vermeer setting? Whichever one you like the most is a method I'm going to use to work, uncover this problem one layer at a time. And we're going to include everyone's ideas, all possibilities. And because it's structured, we're not going to be wasting time. We'll have a structured approach. So it will be a lot faster than you think then at the end of it, we'll say, look up on the screen with our fault tree or a fishbone diagram or whatever it is. And people invariably go, whoa, there's a ton of stuff up there, which I can now see is more than plausible, but I wouldn't have thought of that had I not gone through this process.
And if you would have, you know, if you would have ended the meeting in 30 seconds with what, you know, what whatchamacallit says, oh, I know the problem, let's go solve it.
Yep.
You'd be back there tomorrow.
Correct.
Starting over again, because it's very unlikely that I don't know. The unfortunate part is that sometimes those folks are right and they go solve it.
Yeah.
But it's about a 50-50 in my experience. And then you're just back there again.
But you're back there again with blame, with defensiveness, mm-hmm. with people who say, well, we let you do it last time and you stuffed it. So, hey, why am I going to listen to you again? And it's a valid question, all because we didn't have the leadership, management, facilitation, whatever you want to call it, to actually interpret corporate knowledge into decision actionable information.
Yep. No, well said. So three parts, right? This one is use statistics to monitor, examine, explore yep. the phenomena that's going on. Spend yep. the time to understand the mechanism. You know, what is yep. that process? What is the thing I'm working on? What are the elements here? What, you know, we need the statistics give us clues of what we should be looking at to understand, and vice versa. The mechanisms oftentimes give us clues as to what we should be monitoring or measuring. And then mm-hmm. when you do have an issue, is do the due diligence, do the study so that you can get a better understanding of the mechanisms and what do those statistics actually interpret to. And with the team, that's what I think what we're calling facilitation is using the various processes so that you can, I like your term, is peel back, go step by step and get to a deeper understanding of what's really going on. And the likelihood of getting a good set of issues to go solve is much, much higher rather than,
yeah.
What's the other method called? Shooting from the hip.
There's lots of variations on that title, but yep. Yeah. Down with the gut.
That's right. So, I mean, and we were talking about SPC and bread making, and I think you use that in your SPC course, but this applies to a wide range of the statistics we do. It's just a tool. It's like a microscope onto our process or into our system or under our experiment. It gives us information, or it gives us data, right? I think the next two steps we talked about, the mechanisms and the physics and understanding what's going on in the facilitation, then gets us to information, and then we can take action.
Right.
Right. So if you're...
Sorry, you go.
I was going to wrap up here. You got something else before I...
I was just going to say, just don't short circuit the process. You don't try and... As soon as you have a potential answer in front of you, don't let relief overcome good decision or good judgment. Say, aha, here's something I can write down in my email.
Yep.
Hit send, off I go for the weekend. Just go through the process. Otherwise, you'll be solving 200 more problems yep. on a daily basis than you otherwise have to.
Yeah, well said. So if you're listening to this, and it should make sense, I think it makes sense. And I know from experience, both you and I, Chris, have run into circumstances and good examples of this process of being shortcutted into the peril and vice versa, using this process and stepping through it to great benefit. And so we know it works. And if you're thinking, uh-huh. you know, what are they talking about? You know, or if you got examples that where it works or doesn't work, we'd love you to join the conversation. Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you can find a widget that allows you to leave us a voice message, or you can leave a written message. You can find Chris and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or on our about pages on Ascendo. And there's plenty of ways for you to join the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, Fred, looking forward to speaking next time. I'm going to make sure that everything I do this weekend is well thought through and I'm well, short-circuited the process.
Well, unfortunately, last night I was putting a loaf, and actually I am making bread.
There you go.
And it ferments overnight. Its first rise mm-hmm. is overnight. And this morning it looked a little odd, and it right. kind of over-fermented a bit. And I thought, oh, I forgot the salt. So I'm running an experiment this morning rather than throw away my 900 grams of flour. I took my 22 grams of salt and did a quick fold, incorporated in there, put it into the proofing baskets, and I'm going to hope for the best. Because I do know from experience that if you forget the salt completely, one, the loaves don't taste very good, and two, they deteriorate pretty quickly. They start growing mold very fast. So salt has a couple of functions, but I'm doing an experiment here where I put it in 12 hours too late. So we'll see.
And for a completely unrelated reason, I now need to go get some lunch from Subway.
There you go. Thanks, Chris. Enjoy your day. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Fred.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.